Hey friends, welcome back to Murder on the Map. And before you say, wow, Taylor, you sound weird, I'm suffering from hella seasonal allergies, so we're just gonna go with it today. Because what can you do? Georgia has 2 weeks of good weather a year, and I've been outside enjoying it, so now I'm paying the price. I wanted to start by saying thank you so much to each and every one of you who downloaded the new show or shared the new season with a friend. It was a really overwhelming response, and I'm so grateful for all of the listens and all of the kind words that you guys have had. All of you are so great. On today's episode, I will be talking about a true story that is now being adapted for television, and I saw the preview for this show. Ryan Murphy is doing it. He's the guy who does like American Horror Story and Pose and a bunch of other really popular and award-winning shows, in case you don't know. But he's putting out a show called The Watcher on Netflix next week. And when I heard that it was based on a true story, I had to look it up. And it is balls to the wall, batshit insane. And I'm so excited to share it with you guys today. Today will be part one because the story is really long and I wanted to keep this episode to around 30 minutes. So come back next week for part two. And as always, please rate and review this podcast wherever you're listening. And I really appreciate each and every one of you. We'll get into the story right after the break. One night in June 2014, Derek Broaddus had just finished painting his family's new home in Westfield, New Jersey. Derek and his wife Maria had just bought the six-bedroom house at 657 Boulevard 3 days earlier and were doing some renovations before they moved in. For the Broaddus family, buying 657 Boulevard had fulfilled a dream. Maria was raised in Westfield and the house was just a few blocks from her childhood home. Derek had grown up working class in Maine, and then he moved his way up the ladder at an insurance company in Manhattan to become senior vice president with a salary large enough to afford the $1.3 million house. The Broadduses had bought 657 Boulevard just after Derek celebrated his 40th birthday, and their three kids were already debating which of the house's fireplaces Santa Claus would use. Before Derek headed out for the night, he went to check the mail. There wasn't much in the mailbox except a few bills and a white card-sized envelope. The envelope was addressed in thick, clunky handwriting, reading, "The New Owner." Derek opened the letter and it began warmly, saying, quote, "Dearest new neighbor at 657 Boulevard, allow me to welcome you to the neighborhood." But as Derek kept reading the letter from his new neighbor, it took a turn. "How did you end up here?" the writer asked. "Did 657 Boulevard call to you from its force within?" 657 Boulevard has been the subject of my family for decades now, and as it approaches its 110th birthday, I have been put in charge of watching it and waiting for its second coming. My grandfather watched the house in the 1920s, and my father watched it in the 1960s. It is now my time. Do you know the history of the house? Do you know what lies within the walls of 657 Boulevard? Why are you here? I will find out." The author's reconnaissance had apparently already begun. The letter identified the Broadduses' Honda minivan as well as the workers renovating the home. The letter went on to say, "I see already that you have flooded 657 Boulevard with contractors so that you can destroy the house as it was supposed to be. Tisk, tisk, tisk. Bad move. You don't want to make 657 Boulevard unhappy." Earlier in the week, Derek and Maria had gone to the house and chatted with their new neighbors while their children, who were 5, 8, and 10 years old at the time, ran around the backyard with several kids from the neighborhood. The letter writer seemed to have noticed and said, "You have children. I have seen them. So far, I think that there are 3 that I have counted. Are there more on the way? Do you need to fill the house with young blood as I requested? Better for me. Was your old house too small for the growing family? or was it greed to bring me your children? Once I know their names, I will call to them and draw them to me." The envelope had no return address. "Who am I?" the person wrote. "There are hundreds and hundreds of cars that drive by 657 Boulevard each day. Maybe I am in one. Look at all the windows you can see from 657 Boulevard. Maybe I am in one. Look out any of the many windows in 657 Boulevard at all the people who stroll by each day. Maybe I am one." The letter concluded with a suggestion that this message would not be the last. It said, "Welcome, my friends, welcome. Let the party begin." Followed by a signature typed in cursive font, signed "The Watcher." It was after 10 p.m. and Derek Broaddus was all alone. He raced around the house, turning off lights so no one could see inside, and then called the Westfield Police Department. An officer came to the house, read the letter, and said, "What the fuck," to Derek. The officer asked if Derek had any enemies and recommended moving a piece of construction equipment away from the back porch just in case the watcher tried to toss it through the window. Derek rushed back to his wife and kids, who were living at their old home elsewhere in Westfield. That night, Derek and Maria wrote a letter to John and Andrea Woods, the couple who had sold them 657 Boulevard, to ask if they had any idea who the watcher might be or why she or he had written. Andrea Woods replied the next morning and said a few days before moving out, they had also received a letter from the watcher. The note had been odd, she said, and it made similar mention of the watcher's family observing the house over time, but Andrea said she and her husband had never received anything like it in their 23 years in the house and had thrown the letter away without much thought. That day, they went with Maria to the police station, where Detective Leonard Lugo told her not to tell anyone about the letters, including her new neighbors, whom most of whom she had never met, and all of whom were now suspects. The Broadduses spent the coming weeks on high alert. Derek canceled a work trip, and whenever Maria took the kids to the new house, she would yell their names if they wandered into a corner of the yard. When Derek gave a tour of the renovation to a couple on the block, he froze when the wife said, "It'll be nice to have some young blood in the neighborhood." The Broadduses' general contractor arrived one morning to find that a heavy sign he'd hammered into the front yard had been ripped out overnight. 2 weeks after the letter arrived, Maria stopped by the house to look at some paint samples and check the mail. She recognized the thick black lettering on a card-shaped envelope and called the police. The new letter said, "Welcome again to your new home at 657 Boulevard. The workers have been busy, and I have been watching you unload carfuls of your personal belongings. The dumpster is a nice touch. Have they found what's in the walls yet? In time, they will." This time, the watcher had addressed Derek and Maria directly. Had the watcher been close enough to hear one of the Broaddus' contractors addressing them? The watcher boasted of having learned a lot about the family in the preceding weeks, especially about their children. The letter identified the Broaddus' kids by birth order and by their nicknames, the ones Maria had been yelling. The letter said, "I am pleased to know your names now and the name of the young blood children that you have brought to me. You say their names often." The letter asked about one child in particular, whom the writer said they had seen using an easel inside an enclosed porch, and asked, "Is she the artist in the family?" The letter continued and said, "657 Boulevard is anxious for you to move in. It has been years and years since the young blood ruled the hallways of the house. Have you found all of the secrets it holds yet? Will the young blood play in the basement, or are they too afraid to go down there alone? I would be very afraid if I were them. It is far away from the rest of the house, and if you were upstairs, you would never hear them scream. Will they sleep in the attic, or will you all sleep on the second floor? Who has the bedrooms facing the street? I'll know as soon as you move in. It will help me to know who is in which bedroom. Then I can plan better. All of the windows and doors in 657 Boulevard allow me to watch you and track you as you move throughout the house. Who am I? I am the watcher, and I have been in control of 657 Boulevard for the better part of 2 decades now. The Woods family turned it over to you. It was their time to move on and kindly sold it when I asked them to. I pass by many times a day. 657 Boulevard is my job, my life, my obsession. And now you are too, Broaddus family. Welcome to the product of your greed. Greed is what brought the past 3 families to 657 Boulevard, and now it has brought you to me. Have a happy moving in day. You know I will be watching." Derek and Maria stopped bringing their kids to the house after that letter. They were no longer sure of when or if they were going to move in. Several weeks later, a third letter arrived. "Where have you gone to?" the watcher wrote. 657 Boulevard is missing you. Many Westfield residents compare their town to Mayberry, the idyllic setting for the Andy Griffith Show, the place where a new neighbor might greet you with a welcoming note. Westfield is 45 minutes from New York and is a bit too slow for singles, meaning the town's 30,000 residents are largely well-to-do families. This year, Bloomberg ranked Westfield the 99th richest city in America, but only the 18th wealthiest in New Jersey. And in 2014, when the watcher struck, the website Neighborhood Scout named it the country's 30th safest town. The most pressing local issues of late, according to residents, have been the temporary closure of Trader Joe's after a roof collapse and the rampant scourge of unconstitutional policing, by which they mean aggressive parking enforcement, as Westfield is 86% white. One activity all locals recognize as treacherous is trying to buy a house. One resident said, "There's a lot of money and a lot of ego." They requested anonymity before discussing Westfield's real estate. They went on to say, "I've seen bidding wars where friends lost by $300,000. The Broaddus' house was on Boulevard, a wide, tree-lined street with some of the more desirable homes in town, as the watcher had noted. The Boulevard used to be the street to live on, and you had made it if you lived on the Boulevard. Built in 1905, 657 Boulevard was perhaps the grandest home on the block, and when the Woods family put it on the market, they had received multiple offers above their asking price. That led the Broadduses to initially suspect that the watcher might be someone who was upset about losing out on the house. But the Woods said that the one interested buyer had backed out after a bad medical diagnosis, while another had already found a different home. In an email to the Broadduses, Andrea Woods proposed another theory. Would the mention of the contractor trucks and your children suggest that it was someone in the neighborhood? The letters did indicate proximity. They had been processed in Kearney, New Jersey, the U.S. Postal Service's distribution center in northern New Jersey. The first was postmarked June 4th, before the sale was public. The Woods had never put up a for sale sign, and it was only a day after the contractors arrived. The renovations were mostly interior, and for people who lived nearby, they said they didn't notice an unusual commotion, even from the jackhammering in the basement. When Derek and Maria walked Detective Lugo around the house, they showed him that the easel on the porch was hidden from the street by vegetation, making it difficult to see unless someone was right behind the house or right next door. A few days after the first letter, Maria and Derek went to a barbecue across the street, welcoming them and another homeowner to the block. The Broadduses hadn't told anyone about the watcher, as police instructed, and they found themselves scanning the party for clues while keeping tabs on their kids. At one point, Derek was chatting with John Schmidt, who lived two doors down. When Schmidt told him about the Langfords, who lived between them, Peggy Langford was in her 90s, and several of her adult children, all in their 60s, lived with her. The family was a bit odd, Schmidt said, but harmless. He described one of the younger Langfords, Michael, who didn't work and had a beard, like Ernest Hemingway, as kind of a Boo Radley character. Derek thought the case was solved right there. The Langford house was right next to the easel on the porch. The family had lived there since the 1960s, when the watcher's father, the letter said, had begun observing 657 Boulevard. Richard Langford, the family patriarch, had died 12 years earlier, and the current watcher claimed to have been on the job for the better part of two decades. When the Broadduses told Lugo about the family, he said he already knew, and a week after the first letter arrived, he brought Michael Langford to police headquarters for an interview. Michael denied knowing anything about the letters, but the Broadduses say that Lugo told them the narrative of what he had said matched the things in the letters. But there wasn't much hard evidence, and after a few weeks, the police chief told the Broadduses that short of an admission, there wasn't much the department could do. Derek was quoted saying, "This is someone who threatened my kids, and the police are saying, probably nothing's going to happen. Probably isn't good enough for me." After the second letter, Derek told the cops that if they didn't take care of the situation, that they would have a different kind of case on their hands. He said, "This person attacked my family, where I'm from, and if you do that, you get your ass beat." Frustrated, the Broadduses began their own investigation. Derek became especially obsessed. He set up webcams in 657 Boulevard and spent nights crouched in the dark, watching to see if anyone was watching the house at close range. He had a map displaying when each of 657's neighbors had moved in. The Langfords were the only ones who had been there since the 60s, with overlays marking possible sight lines for the easel and a circle of approximate range of earshot to estimate who might have heard Maria yelling the kids' names. Only a few homes fit both criteria. The Broaddus's also turned to several experts. They employed a private investigator who staked out the neighborhood and ran background checks on the Langfords, but didn't find anything noteworthy. Derek reached out to a former FBI agent who served as the inspiration for Clarice Starling in Silence of the Lambs. They were on a high school board of trustees together. They also hired Robert Linehan, another former FBI agent, to conduct a threat assessment. Linehan recognized several old-fashioned ticks in the letters that pointed to an older writer. The envelope was addressed to Mr. and Mrs. Broaddus. The salutations included the day's weather, quote, warm and humid, or sunny and cool for a summer day, and the sentences had double spaces between them. The letters had a certain literary panache, which suggested a voracious reader and a surprising lack of profanity given the anger, which Linehan thought meant a less macho writer. Maybe, he wondered, the Watcher had seen The Watcher, starring Keanu Reeves, as a serial killer who stalks the detective trying to catch him. Linehan didn't think The Watcher was likely to act on the threats, but the letters had enough typos and errors to imply a certain erraticism. For example, the first letter was dated Tuesday, June 4th, but that day was a Wednesday. There was also a seething anger directed at the wealthy in particular. The Watcher was upset by new money moving into town. One of the letters said, quote, are you one of those Hoboken transplants who are ruining Westfield? And they were also upset by the Broaddus's relatively modest renovations. A new letter said, the house is crying from all the pain it is going through. You have changed it and made it so fancy. You are stealing its history. It cries for the past and what it used to be in the time when I roamed its halls. The 1960s were a good time for 657 Boulevard, when I ran room to room, imagining the life with the rich occupants there. The house was full of life and young blood. Then it got old, and so did my father, but he kept watching it until the day he died, and now I watch and wait for the day where the young blood will be mine again. Linehan recommended looking into the former housekeepers or their descendants. Perhaps the Watcher was jealous that the Broadduses bought a home that the writer could never afford. But the focus remained on the Langfords. In cooperation with Westfield Police, the Broaddus's sent a letter to the Langfords announcing plans to tear down the house, hoping to prompt a response. Nothing happened. Detective Lugo brought Michael Langford in for a second interview, but got nowhere, and his sister Abby accused the police of harassing their family. Eventually, the Broaddus's hired Lee Levitt, a lawyer, who met with several members of the Langford family, as well as their attorney, to show them the letters, along with photos explaining how their home was one of the few vantage points from which the easel could be seen. The meeting grew tense, and the Langfords insisted that Michael was innocent. One night, Derek had a dream in which he confronted Peggy Langford and demanded that she build an 8-foot fence between the properties. Maria was also having other kinds of dreams. One night, she woke up to an especially vivid one about a man who lived nearby. She said, he was wearing these boots and carrying a pitchfork and calling to the kids, and I just couldn't get to them in time. She thought almost anyone could be the Watcher, which made daily life like navigating a labyrinth of threats. She probed the faces of shoppers at Trader Joe's to see if they looked strangely at her kids, and spent hours Googling anyone who seemed suspicious. There were reasons to consider other suspects. For one, the police spoke to Michael before the second letter was sent, which would make sending two letters especially reckless. The Broadduses say that Lugo told them that they wouldn't receive any more letters after he spoke to Michael. Then there was the rest of the neighborhood to consider. The private investigator found two child sex offenders within a few blocks. Bill Woodward, the Broaddus's house painter, said that he had also noticed something strange. The couple behind 657 Boulevard kept a pair of lawn chairs strangely close to the Broaddus's property, and Bill actually saw the couple sitting facing the Broaddus's house instead of facing their own house or anywhere else in the yard. But by the end of 2014, the investigation had stalled. The watcher had left no digital trail, no fingerprints, and no way to place anybody at the scene of the crime that could have been hatched from pretty much any mailbox in northern New Jersey. The letters could be read closely for clues or dismissed at the nonsensical ramblings of a sociopath. Basically, it was like trying to find a needle in a haystack for detectives. Out of options, Derek showed the letters to a priest who agreed to bless the house. The renovations to 657 Boulevard, including a new alarm system, were finished within a few months. The idea of moving in filled the Broaddus's with overwhelming anxiety. Could they let their kids play outside or have friends over? Would they get a new letter every week? Derek ended up pricing out trained German shepherds and also posted a job on a website for military veterans. The job posting said all you have to do is work out in the backyard every day. But the Broadduses didn't go through with those plans because they hadn't bought 657 to feel bunkered in a fortress. Derek had been responding to occasional alarms at the house, sometimes in the middle of the night, bringing a knife with him just in case. It didn't help that the watcher seemed to be getting more and more unhinged with a letter that said, 657 Boulevard is turning on me. It is coming after me, and I don't understand why. What spell did you cast on it? It used to be my friend, and now it is my enemy. I am in charge of 657 Boulevard. It is not in charge of me. I will fend off its bad things and wait for it to become good again. It will not punish me. I will rise again. I will be patient and wait for this to pass and for you to bring the young blood back to me. 657 Boulevard needs young blood. It needs you. Come back and let the young blood play again like I once did. Let the young blood sleep in 657 Boulevard. Stop changing it and let it alone. The Broadduses had sold their old home, so they moved back in with Maria's parents while continuing to pay the mortgage and property taxes on 657 Boulevard. Derek had to still do maintenance on the house, like shoveling the driveway. He'd go at 5 a.m., shovel, and go back to his in-laws and do the same thing. They had only told a handful of friends about the letters, which left others to ask why they weren't moving in. The Broadduses said legal issues, but it led their friends to wonder if they were getting divorced. They fought constantly and started taking medication to fall asleep. Maria decided to see a therapist after a routine doctor's visit that began with the question, "How are you?" caused her to burst into tears. The therapist said that she was suffering post-traumatic stress disorder that wouldn't go away until they got rid of the house. 6 months after the letters first arrived, the Broadduses decided to sell 657 Boulevard. They initially listed it for more than they paid to reflect the renovations they'd done. However, few worlds are more gossipy than suburban New Jersey real estate, and rumors had already begun to swirl about why the house sat empty. One broker emailed to say her client loved it, but there are so many unsubstantiated rumors flying around, ranging from sexual predator to stalker, that they needed to know more. The Broadduses sent a partial disclosure mentioning the letters to the interested buyer and told Caldwell Banker, their realtor, that they intended to show the full letters to anyone whose offer was accepted. Several preliminary bids came in well below the asking price, but the Broadduses weren't ready to take such a financial hit and only wanted to share the letters with likely buyers. No one got that far, even after they lowered the price. A Caldwell agent who hadn't read the letters told them in an email that they were being unnecessarily forthcoming. Derek and Maria thought about what they would have done if the previous owners told them about the letter from the watcher. The Woodses, both retired scientists, told the Broadduses that they remembered the letter they received as more strange than threatening, thanking them for taking care of the house. They said they never had any issues. They said they rarely locked their doors and certainly never felt watched. But the Broadduses felt the name alone was ominous enough to merit mentioning to a new family moving in, and on June 2, 2015, a year after buying 657 Boulevard, they filed a legal complaint against the Woodses, arguing that the Woodses should have disclosed the letter just as they had the fact that sometimes water goes in the basement. The Broadduses say they hoped to reach a quiet settlement. The kids still didn't know about the watcher, and their lawyer assured that, at most, a small legal newswire might pick up the story. Instead, it became part of the Today Show segment called Today's Take. Here's the audio from that segment.
You know what? it's so strange. We do some creepy stories. This might be top 10 creepy. Top 10 creepy stories out there. So this family in New Jersey, a beautiful community. What's it?
Westfield.
Yes. Huge mall. Gorgeous. That's how I know it, because it's a mall. Anyway, beautiful home. They just bought $1.3 million. Dream home at that price tag. Sure. Got to be your dream home. Well, as they're preparing to move in, they're also preparing a lawsuit against the family who sold them the home. The reason, they say they're being terrorized by a person called the Watcher, who is stalking their dream home and thus them if
this
they move into the home.
Crazy story.
Here's the deal. So this the person left a letter, signed it the Watcher, and the letter says, my grandfather watched the house in the 20s, and my father watched in the 60s. It's now my time.
Okay, ooh. Bye-bye.
That is
and
what.
Said, why are you here?
I will find out. So now the attorney or an attorney representing the family would not elaborate when we reached out, but they said that there is a lawsuit. Something is pending. The prior owners, according to the lawsuit, were aware of this watcher and deliberately withheld the information.
This is according to the lawsuit.
This is according to, as I said, the attorney representing the family. So here's the deal. Certain cities have a disclosure. Mm-hmm. You have to say if I had pipe problems, if I roofed, these other issues. New Jersey doesn't have this disclosure law in place. And if they did, for example, would it include something like this? I believe in Texas, where I'm from, they have this disclosure. But would it include if I had a potentially crazy person watching the house?
If somebody died in the house or was murdered,
that's a part
in
of
the
disclosures
house, they're supposed
often.
To disclose that information. But apparently, they've been getting even more letters. They've been since that first letter.
And the question is, I mean, what the law right now may not be on their side, depending on what New Jersey says. But what do you think? I mean, would you sue? I wouldn't move in.
You have to read this next letter.
Yeah, I wouldn't
read this next letter.
Oh, they said
this is crazy.
The letter went on to say, have they found what it is in the walls yet? In time they will. I'm pleased to know your names and the names now of the young blood you've brought to me.
So creepy.
That was scary. I didn't like it.
See,
it's really creepy.
I think it's a hoax. I think it's somebody messing with these
people. Well, see, I thought maybe it's, you know, somebody who didn't get the house that they had bid on it along with. I was thinking maybe this is a competitive bidding situation.
Well, that can't be true if the lawsuit alleges that
the family
prior to were getting
that's
these
assuming
letters.
That's true.
If the lawsuit is true.
Yeah.
I wouldn't move in that house.
I'm not moving in that house.
I wouldn't move in that house. No.
No.
The story then went viral. News trucks camped out at 657 Boulevard, and one local reporter set up a lawn chair to conduct his own watch. The Broaddus's got more than 300 media requests, but with advice from a crisis management consultant referred by one of Derek's colleagues, they decided not to speak publicly to spare their kids even more attention. They vacated Westfield and went to a friend's beach house. They didn't find much peace there, however, because Maria's grandpa had a heart attack and then the friend they were staying with had a grandma seizure. Eventually, Derek and Maria sat down with their children to explain the real reason why they hadn't moved into their home. The kids had plenty of questions. Who is the watcher? Where does this person live? Why is this person mad at us? To which Derek and Maria had very few answers. Derek told reporters, can you imagine having that conversation with a five-year-old, saying your town isn't as safe as you think it is and there's a boogeyman obsessed with you? There's so much more to this story, and that's next time on Murder on the Map. Thanks for listening. Thanks so much for listening to another episode of Murder on the Map. I am desperate to discuss conspiracy theories about this episode, so please DM me with your theories or if you think it's a hoax like Al Roker or anything like that. I will have part two of the story next week, and the show starts on October 12th on Netflix if you want to check that out. Thanks again for listening, and as always, if you have a case that you want me to cover or a story you want me to tell, please DM me on Instagram at TaylorBTalks or email me at murderonthemap@gmail.com. I will see you next week with an all-new episode. Oh yeah, I just said that. Part two of The Watcher next week. See you soon. Stay safe, friends.